Today's show is sponsored by Talkspace, the online therapy company. For a fraction of the price of traditional therapy, you can pick an experienced, licensed therapist you relate to and feel comfortable with. Each and every therapist has at least a master's degree and has completed over 3,000 hours of supervised work. To match with your perfect therapist, go to Talkspace.com/boom. And to show your support for this podcast, use code BOOM to get $30 off your first month. That's BOOM, Talkspace.com/boom, B-O-O-M.
You are Locked On Wizards, your daily Washington Wizards podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello and welcome to another edition of the Locked On Wizards podcast. Once again, for the second game in a row, coming to you to discuss a loss, a double-digit loss, a loss that was ugly. When they got blown out in game three, it was like, all right, the score was score was indicative of the situation. The Wizards lost by 10 tonight, and while it was tied in the fourth quarter early on, I think a 10-point result does not sound like a far-off result. So anyway, we're going to talk about that, the Wizards 111-101 loss. I am here, Ben Standing here, if I didn't say that already, with the man, the myth, Kyle Wiedeye from truthaboutit.net. We are in an undisclosed location somewhere in the D.C. area that at the moment is going, whoa, wait a minute, I thought the Wizards had this thing wrapped. How'd they come back home 2-2? Wasn't this thing over, Kyle? Wasn't that what we all heard, thought, talked about, discussed, pondered,
it's analyzed? It's never wrapped. It's never wrapped when you're the Wizards. But, yeah, I mean, even like we've all sort of, we obviously watched the game from a bar tonight.
Is that true?
I don't know. I'm still trying to, was that our undisclosed location? Because we're not at a bar right now.
No.
But as we've discussed, even games one and two, when the Wizards won, it wasn't like they did it in convincing fashion. But then you felt like even three and four, game three was an abomination. It was just bad. Game four, it just didn't seem like they had the answer either. And so now we're all even, and it's still quote unquote a playoff series because no team has won a game on the other team's home court yet.
This game, on some level, sort of felt like a game from earlier in the year in that Bradley Beal gets 32 points, John Wall gets 22 and 10. We'll come back to all these guys in a minute. But so your two stars, at least offensively, put up the numbers you're looking for. But some of the other starters didn't do that much. But if you look at the quarter breakdown, in the first and third quarter, the Wizards were a plus 16. So if you think about that, that's the starters are out there for the most part. They're up, but it's a plus 16. When the bench essentially came in, now granted, the starters are playing in the second quarter as well, but when the bench is in there more or less, in the second and fourth quarter, minus 26. And that was the issue most of the year, right? You start that, you get a lead in the first and third, you come out in the second and fourth, and that lead disappears. Again, I'm not saying it was all on the bench, but it did feel more like the way we were earlier in the year where they had like two or three guys going and then nothing else was working enough to get this going. And earlier in the year, when it was working, the whole starting five was in sync and the bench was the problem. The whole starting five is not in sync right now, and they're not getting tons of production off the bench. Again, no Jan Mahimi still, but that's kind of what it reminded me of.
Yeah, I think you hit it there because, yeah, you think like Wall and Beal combined for 54 points. That's going to be a lot. Maybe enough to win on most nights, but we've always talked about these Wizards, how like they don't have this one, like this, these guys who are like a superstar, so they've got to share the ball, and it makes sense, you know, because they're not set up that way. But you look at how Atlanta scored, six guys in double figures.
I think each, seven guys, huh?
Well, yes. Oh, yeah, you're right. I forgot. Your boy Jose Calderon, who I believe, according to Todd Dybas, had a podium game, which meant he was being interviewed afterward. And of course, he got to play some because Dennis Schroeder got in foul trouble early, and it wasn't like Calderon played great, but he did enough, and he and Brandon Jennings were sort of going at each other. But you're right, like, all five Atlanta starters scored in double figures. Bazemore had 16 off the bench. Calderon had 10. But when you look at the Wizards, it's like Otto had 13, and he, I guess we're reaching for that as him making an appearance in a series, but, you know, not so much so. But, Morris and Gortat combined for 11 points on 4 for 14 shooting. And that's not sort of the even ball distribution Wizards that we talk up, ball distribution led by Wall and Beal. It's not happening.
All right, so let's go through this. And before we get in more detail, I always need to remind everybody, you can, of course, find all the podcasts on iTunes. We are now on Stitcher, Kyle. I don't know if you do the Stitcher thing, but we are now on...
Heard of it.
Yeah. We're now on there. If there's somewhere else we should be podcasting, let me know. Of course, Twitter, at Locked On Wizards, at Ben Standing, and Kyle is, let's see if I can get this right, at Truth _ About _ It.
Totally right.
Awesome. That's enough plugging. Anyway, so we're going to go through this sort of in the same way I did after Game 3, sort of the who, what, where, when, why aspect of it all. So let's start with the why, as in why did the Wizards lose Game 4? I looked at the basic stats, field goal percentage, three-point shooting, all that stuff, they could have done better. It wasn't like there wasn't like massive gaps between them and Atlanta per se. But the one stat that sort of jumped out at me beyond what I just said in terms of the quarters, points in the paint. Now, it wasn't as bad as Game 3 when they're outscored 60-34, but it was 44-30, and it almost felt like it was worse because to the point as to like sort of in a broad picture, why did Atlanta win this game? Why is the series tied at 2? When you go into the series, the Wizards have a big advantage in the backcourt, Wall and Beal. On paper, the Hawks have an advantage with Millsap and Gore and Dwight Howard, but Marquise Morris during the regular season did a pretty good job against Millsap. He did also in Game 1. Then in Game 2, he got in a lot of foul trouble, and Millsap has not been able to get stopped since. My take was if Millsap is the best player in the series, the Wizards are going to lose. And today, Millsap had 19 points, 9 rebounds, 7 assists, 2 steals. That is plus, then Dwight Howard had his most Dwight Howard game of the series with 16 and 15, especially early in the game. He was just a force. He was getting alley-oops from Kent Bazemore. So like the fact that like the Wizards backcourt, Dennis Schroeder is, Wall is not killing Dennis Schroeder. We'll get to Wall's defense in a little bit, but like that he and Beal are not like winning that to the degree, like they're not covering the spread. And these last two games, the Atlanta front court is definitely covering the spread and then some against Morris and Gortat. And that is, I think, causing a problem. We're just looking at it from that standpoint. They're winning what they have to do, and they're keeping it close in the backcourt.
Yeah, and, the Morris thing, that's an issue. Because I think we probably all talked about this early in the season. Like, Markieff Morris is sort of... And we even had a post on Truth About It about who's the most important Wizard after Wall and Beal. You can go a number of different directions, but I was always like, Markieff Morris is that guy because you brought him in to partially so he can guard guys like Paul Millsap, LeBron. He can be that guy at a four position who can stretch the floor, who can guard other guys off the dribble drive. And Millsap has just taken it to him. And Morris has always had, like, the one thing about his game you can knock at least first was his rebounding. And he's averaging, 5 rebounds a game during the series? I'm trying to pull up the stats, maybe even worse. Yeah, 5 rebounds a game. And Paul Millsap's averaging 7.5. So already Morris is getting killed on the boards. But when it gets back to the why, I mean, maybe I don't want to go back and say that Scott Brooks is getting out-coached, but I would say that Budenholzer is doing a better job coaching up a mediocre offense than Brooks is coaching a potentially potent offense, but against a pretty good defense. And so when it comes down to it, it's Atlanta's defense has really dictated what the Wizards want to try and do. And it that has sort of been why this series is tied at 2 games. And it really, if you look at it, Atlanta won games 3 and 4 pretty convincingly. Washington kind of had to like maneuver games 1 and 2 in different regards, but the Wizards are almost lucky they're not down 3-1 at this point.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. I mean, those first couple games, I mean, Wall's brilliance offensively, I guess, just was too much. To be more specific, I guess, in the smaller picture as to why they lost. So in the fourth quarter, both teams run. The Wizards get it to 88-89 after a 7-0 run on a nice drive by Wall. Atlanta, though, bumped it quickly back up to 7. The Wizards cut it down to 95-91, and then basically they just never had much of a chance there. They had a play where probably the game-breaker stretch. Millsap gets an offensive rebound. As he's getting it and falling backwards, I guess they called a foul, he takes a shot falling down, makes it, gets the and one, and then Schroeder comes down, hits a three, and that put it away. But I would point to a more specific part in the game where I basically think they lost the game, and that was, I believe, near the end of the first quarter, Dennis Schroeder picked up his not first, not second, but third personal foul. The Wizards were winning 35-28 after the first quarter, and Schroeder's got three fouls. That seemed like a good deal, right? You should build on that, at least maintain even. Oh, no. That's silly. No, instead, the Wizards just started getting smoked. Atlanta tied it at 38 and eventually kept going. It was a 21-5 run, and they eventually led at halftime 59-50. In that stretch, Jose Calderon just... I mean, he looked like... I'm not saying he was the all-star level player that we saw earlier in his career, but there was way more of that.
Yeah, he didn't really look great. He was just active, and
he was very active.
He got into it, and
yeah, he was very animated with the refs. He even got a tech at one point. But look, I mean, he hit some threes. Later in the game, he had like an offensive rebound tip in. He was just active, making shots, and you know, he's a smart, heady player. He knows what he's doing, obviously. But I thought he ran out of juice. The fact that the Wizards made him a factor, a podium game at a Jose Calderon. If you had given me Vegas odds and said, okay, pick a few guys for that, I would not have put my money on Jose Calderon getting a podium game.
No, me neither. And the only thing I'll say about that is that, you know, early in the second quarter, the Wizards were able to maneuver some switches where Calderon was guarding Bogdanovich one time, so they got the ball. He couldn't convert in a post. Next time, Jason Smith was... Like, Calderon was trying to guard Jason Smith. Wizards moved the ball around well. Kelly Oubre ended up breaking a three. Next time down the court, Calderon was switched on to Bogdanovich again. Bogdanovich actually scored this time. But if you get Jason Smith or Bogdanovich, two big guys, against Calderon in the post, and you go 1-for-3, that doesn't bode well for how things are going to turn out.
Yeah, and also, I mean, just... Everything with the Wizards offense is so... Well, actually, I'll hold off on this thought. Let me hold off on that thought. We'll hold off on that. All right, let's go to the who of it all. As in, who on Atlanta is the guy that that is now getting all your sports hate? I mean, Calderon's got to be high up on the list of potential guys. For me, because it's Atlanta, it's all going to go to Dwight Howard. I put my chips there a long time ago. And... you know, he was a force tonight, but how about for you? Who's the guy in Atlanta that's driving? Because every year in the playoffs, right, there's always this deal. Somebody on the other team becomes that guy. You're like, oh, my Lord, get that guy out of here. You got a guy yet after four games?
Well, Calderon's always been that dude in some regard. And he reminds me of, like, you remember the terrible Chris Kattan movie named Corky Romano? I can't even remember the plot, but... Calderon reminds me of Chris Kattan playing some guy named Corky Romano for some reason.
I never understood the Chris Kattan thing. Even when he was... What was the skit on Saturday Night?
Mango. Mango.
I was like, what? What is going on here? I'm not surprised that he's one of the Saturday Night Live guys that didn't have a burgeoning career. Like, him and Rob Schneider was always like... Their skits were like...
Night at the Roxbury was...
Wow, that's where we're going?
I guess so. I mean, it's sort of like a cult classic, and it's so bad it's kind of funny. But I'm gonna get back to your boy Kent Bazemore.
Ooh.
Because we've seen Tim Hardaway Jr. had a bet down year last year, had a better year this year, and is building on it in the playoffs. But Bazemore is a guy, like, even the Wizards in the offseason, or at least a lot of Wizards fans, were like, hey, let's maybe we need that guy. Maybe we need this guy on a wing who can come in and play defense, hit some threes. And now, of course, that's the guy the Wizards could use, given different circumstances. And, you know, I think he's sort of outplaying Beal in a sense so far this series.
Look, he's definitely that. I mean, like, I'm a big Ken Bazemore guy. Ken Bazemore, guest of the podcast. But I knew once the price tag got to what it was, like 4 for $70, I'm like, okay, well, that's it. They can't afford that.
Yeah.
The thing about it is they technically have that guy. His name is Kelly Oubre. I mean, but we've now gone backwards on the Kelly Oubre experiment. He's back to where he was earlier in the year, where it's all attempt but zero production. There was that one play I tweeted where, like, there was a play that he, in the first half, I think, he picked up, like, a loose ball. They had a semi-break, like a 3-on-2 or something. And I, you know, I had him, like, oh, but he's going to take the drive and get called for a charge. And immediately, that's what happened. He's back to where his lack of instincts are causing a problem. But the last 10 or so games of the regular season, that energy was being used for good. He was using it for defense. He was getting out. He's not helping. And this isn't all about him, because he's not the only one who's not doing what they needed them to do. But in terms of Kent Bazemore, hypothetically, Kelly Oubre could give you some of that energy, bouncy play with some production offensively, and he's just not there, at least not this series.
And just to, like, reiterate why I chose Bazemore, off the bench, he didn't shoot, like, the lights out, but he scored 16 points on 12 shots, picked up 4 rebounds, 7 assists, 3 steals. And after, of course, Jose Calderon's plus 29 and plus minus, which sounds completely ridiculous because he only played 20 minutes, Bazemore was second on the Hawks, plus 13. You always give the disclaimer, plus minus is such like a it's not a game-to-game thing, but it's always interesting to really look at, like, impact.
So, I mean, agree on the plus minus, but I said this 100 times on the podcast. I'd always say, you know, plus minus is a bad indicator, but for the first, like, 40 or so games of the Wizards season, it was a legitimate indicator.
Right.
Because the starters were good, and then the bench was always a negative. Whichever starter got stuck playing with the bench in the second quarter typically was down, and it really did align with that. And I mean, the fact that somebody caught me when Calderon was in there, especially in the second quarter, is when Atlanta took off, and they had an opportunity to put them away, or at least, you know, maintain that lead and end their halftime with that. All right, let's go to the next one. Where did the Wizards passing game go? How many assists did they have today?
They had a total of, wait, this can't be right. My stats are not updating right, but Wall had 10 assists, 6 turnovers, if you're looking for the main...
Yeah, well, so even beyond whatever the assist total was...
All right, so we're looking at 19 assists, 14 turnovers.
So even beyond the actual number, because they missed a lot of shots as well, but the thing about it is, like, where's the ball movement? Like, it feels like every time the Atlanta scores, there's... You know, I'm not saying every time, but, you know, it's more free-flowing. Somebody's getting an open look, whatever. The Wizards, like, every offensive play is a struggle. They have to get, like, some crazy offensive rebound and hit a crazy shot in traffic. Wall has to hit these, like, I think you said it late in the game. Wall had some great drive, and you were like, boy, this is what they're having to rely on. John Wall has to go 100 miles an hour, beat 3 guys off the dribble to get a contested layup. That's what they're counting on. And we saw that all year. I mean, especially when they were hot, one of the hallmarks of this team was ball movement. All 5, especially the starters, were getting involved. I mean, we're just not seeing that anymore. No. I preface all this by saying they keep missing shots. Like, they have shots open. They are just and they're not even, sometimes they're not even close. Like, I remember a couple times when Markieff and Otto took a shot and, like, it's like, boy, I could have missed that one too. It's like way off.
Yeah, it's weird because I try to do this very unscientific breakdown about contested shots versus uncontested shots in game 3. Basically, the Wizards on uncontested shots, the Wizards have shot 49% over games 1 through 3. But for some reason in game 3, their uncontested shots was down to 35%, I think. And that sort of goes to speak like, all right, guys are just missing open shots. But when you look at it, say they shot 40% or 41%, you're really only talking about 6 or so points. They still got beat by 18 points in game 3. So fast forward to your point tonight, you know, you just didn't feel like the offense was just succumbing to the slightest bit of pressure. And we know that Atlanta is a good defensive team, but it's not like, you don't feel like their perimeter players are really known to be able to just shut guys down, especially guys who've sort of proven themselves. Obviously, the playoffs, it's a different beast. But it just seems weird that just a little bit of pressure from Atlanta, and maybe it's just the right time pressure, maybe they really know the scouting report, But it just seems odd that Wall and Beal are sort of – things are so changed up for the Wizards with that pressure that Atlanta's been giving.
And I'm not sure – I'm curious if you can do the math. How many shots did Wall and Beal take relative to the overall total? Because I know there was a point earlier in the year – I've got to update my stats – or when Wall and Beal were taking a certain percentage of the shots, the more they were taking, the worse the Wizards' record was. They were better when they had a line that sort of looked like Atlanta's. I mean, Paul Millsap led Atlanta in scoring tonight with 19 points. The Wizards were sort of better off when that was happening. They haven't been as good when Wall is scoring a ton. And it's fine, I think, if Beal scores a lot of points. And Beal was actually pretty efficient tonight. I think he basically shot 50% from the field. But... I mean, look, the other part of it is, like I said, they're just not making that many shots. Bogdanovich, it was good to see get a little thing going from three-point range, and he was aggressive
early. He's 5 for 9 from the field, 2 for 4 from deep.
Yeah, so that was good. And, like, their general percentage was, like, 34-35% from three.
Yeah, I mean, so 11 for 32, that's a decent – they shot 34%. I think, to your point, Wall and Beal accounted for almost 50% of the field goal attempts, but then they accounted for – just exactly 50% of the make. So is it with your sort of theory, if they account for half of the team's shots, is that a good thing or
no,
bad thing?
No.
Doesn't seem good.
It was like high 40s. It was like a line like 46-47%. When they went over that, things were bad and weren't as good.
The where, the when, or the who?
We're going to the... We're going to the win. But yeah, anyway, it just feels like that free-flowing offense is out there. And I mentioned this point the other day. Those Scott Brooks after-timeout plays, those things were art. He was killing it. Maybe I'm missing it. Maybe I'm focusing on did I order the next, did I get my hamburger yet from the bar and missed it. But I don't remember seeing too many plays after timeouts where you're like, whoa, look at that great look. But at the end of the day, as I often watch a show, The Jump, Rachel Nichols show, and at the end of it, they always have this segment called Make or Miss, because they say it's a Make or Miss league. Right. It is kind of what this is coming down to. For all the ball movement stuff, they're just not making shots. But that said, the ball movement does not look like it's there. Hey, a quick word here from our sponsor, SeatGeek. Buying tickets online for sports and concerts has been a confusing process for a long time. It's always been hard to find the best deal for that game or show you want to go to. And none of those older ticket sites want to change that. But SeatGeek is different. They've come along and created an amazing app and website that makes it easier than ever for fans to buy and sell tickets. I just went looking for you two tickets recently. And SeatGeek, I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. And everything about SeatGeek is designed to make life easier for sports and music fans. SeatGeek does all the price comparison for you by searching multiple ticket sites and ensuring that you get the best possible deal. SeatGeek does all the work and you save time and money. And SeatGeek wants to help you get the most bang for your buck. That's why every ticket on SeatGeek is given a grade based on value. You'll immediately see any underpriced seats and be able to find the best deals that fit your budget. Best of all, my listeners get a $20 rebate off their first SeatGeek purchase. Here's how you do it. You download the SeatGeek app, go to the settings tab and click add a promo code. Enter the promo code LOWIZARDS. SeatGeek will send you $20 after you've made your first ticket purchase. Download the SeatGeek app and enter promo code LOWIZARDS today. All right, back to the podcast. All right, let's get to the when, as in when did the Wizards stop playing defense? It's not all about any one player, but for the Wizards defensively, I always think it starts with John Wall. So I don't think it's just about today's game, sort of how I'm viewing it, but I don't think he was particularly great defensively today. But that second quarter, Jose Calderon's going off. He wasn't always the one on him, but he was there, and no particularly great stand, as I recall. Dennis Schroeder had 18 points, and he's been very good this series. I mean, Dennis Schroeder did not have a great season, relatively speaking, to sort of the hype, and he has been every bit, if you factor in all aspects of the game, he's not been that far off from Wall in this series.
Yeah, I mean...
Oh, well, can I say one more thing?
Do it.
I firmly believe, I don't know if there's any player in the league who their energy and attitude reverberates more throughout the rest of the team. When John Wall is bitching to the refs, they all start bitching. When John Wall is not playing defense, they don't play defense. When John Wall is aggressive on the point and focused and playing defense, they play defense.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just how this works. And he is not, this whole, like, you know, this whole, are they going to turn around for the playoffs? It hasn't happened yet.
Yeah, it's tough because, you know, I'll go back to game three for a second. And one of the very first plays of the game, Wall is sitting there biting on a pump fake from Schroeder, who drove it right by him and scored. Tonight, I didn't feel like, and again, I was scrambling to get to the venue, we'll call it, where we were watching the game. I missed half of the first quarter. I didn't, you know, didn't see instances where Wall is great on defense, didn't see instances, like other instances of which stood out where he's bad. I think it's just sort of this team thing where, like, Beal went under some screens at weird times, and I guess, you know, first of all, the defense is going to say, all right, go under the screen on Schroeder, let him shoot it. But the Wizards not only did that, but they were bad about recovering onto the shooter, at least making him take a tough shot. And so that happened to Beal a couple times. I mean, there are times where, like, Morris was completely out of position. So this is almost like going back to the very first game of the year. The Wizards were playing the Hawks, speaking of. And it just, guys did not seem on the same page defensively. And sure, you can blame Gortat for whatever he's doing. You could talk about Otto Porter and his inability to guard guys off the dribble. But it really gets to the point where, like, when, sort of to your point, and it's not just Wall, when Wall and Beal and Morris, when those three guys, especially Wall and Morris, are attuned on defense and they're on, that's going to dictate how the entire team plays. And we have not seen that. Morris had an especially bad game, and for all the shit-talking he's done this series, he's not backed it up except for maybe game one. And he started off in a rut, and he even missed some bunnies, some chippies. Gortat missed some bunnies. And this whole team, it just seems to have something in their head versus this Hawks team. And I'll be curious to see if playing at home on Wednesday will change that.
Yeah, all I'm saying on the Wall thing is we know he has the ability to be a border, you know, a lockdown defender-y type guy, an all-NBA type defender or whatever. I would just like to see him come out next game and do that. Just say that for this game, I'm taking Dennis Schroeder away. Because the thing about it is Atlanta's not a great scoring team. I mean, okay, Paul Millsap's really good, but you do in theory, like we said, have a guy with Markieff Morris who can match up with him. If you can limit Dennis Schroeder to not being an all-star level player, to just being kind of what he kind of was this year, where else are they going?
I mean, Schroeder did get in foul trouble tonight. And
he did.
He was minus 13. That's by far the worst on all the Hawks. He went 6 for 15 from the field, one assist to one turnover, which is like, all right, whatever. But you almost feel like Schroeder was relatively neutralized tonight, and the Wizards still couldn't take advantage of that.
Well, that's what I'm saying. I mean, the second quarter, Calderon, you know, more than filled in. And, yeah, I mean, you know, Schroeder, I mean, he made big shots late to sort of put this thing away, too. And I'm also focusing on sort of the whole series. I mean, he's been getting points, you know.
Which we have to, for a second, credit Dwight Howard, because he's been, like, one of the people have written about how Dwight Howard, like, oh, like, he's a guy hurting his team. Well, he didn't so much hurt his team tonight. He had 16 points. He had 15 rebounds. He had, like, and I think a lot of his points came in the first half, maybe. He caught several lob dunks, and I think he was just generally active and aware, and his teammates got on the ball. And you sort of have to give him credit for stepping up tonight as well if you're going to talk about other guys on Atlanta.
All right, listening to the Locked On Wizards podcast, Ben Standing here along with Kyle Weedeye from truthaboutit.net. I was going to, so we're down to the what of it all. I was going to give you a funny what, as in, what do you make of Skinny and Nene kicking butt for Houston? But since we're running out of time, I'll go with, what is the biggest change that you see for the Wizards need to make going into game five?
You put me on a spot here.
All right, well, I'll go with this. Well, first of all, we haven't really even mentioned Jan Mahimi. Now I'm assuming.
That's what I was gonna say, like, get him healthy.
All right, I'm assuming Jan Mahimi's not around. This is the first game where I kind of felt that they missed him because Dwight Howard was a force. I mean, Gortat had 18 rebounds, only had 2 points. Gortat just whatever he could do was holding his own, but but they needed more from him. Here's one change I would make. I would, at all costs, get rid of the John Wall Brandon Jennings pairing. I mean, I'm not saying that's the reason why the second quarter went wrong, but they started with that in the second quarter. The Wizards were up 35-28. They ended the quarter down 9. The offense, there was a stretch there where the offense didn't score for like 4 or 5 minutes, and I'm pretty sure they were both in the game at that point. And Brandon Jennings had some moments today, as he often does. It's just a bad fit.
Yeah.
It's just all there is to it. It's not peanut butter and chocolate. It's peanut butter and oysters. They don't complement each other at all.
They played 4.1 minutes together tonight, even zero and plus minus. Again, we're turning to that plus minus thing, which is whatever, but they've usually been pretty bad, and maybe that's lucky, but you're right. It seems like a weird combination, and you would think that Jennings and Beal would be together more, because then you can say, all right, Beal, like, and then maybe this is a weird thing, like, maybe Scott Brooks, and you feel like he wants to do this, and you feel like he's thought about doing this, but maybe you just need to get the ball in Beal's hands some more. I know, like, over the years, they've tried to do that more. It hasn't always turned out well, but in the playoffs, it's like, maybe let this guy have the team a little bit, and while Wall is on the bench, and play, you know, put Beal with Jennings, and that's, I don't know if that's what you're getting at, but that's what I would.
Well, look, at the end of the first quarter, so this was a game where Beal finished the first quarter off. Jennings came in late in the first quarter, and they had some stuff going, because it's just a better fit, a point guard and the two guard. Jennings had a little bit of a heat check moment. It just makes more sense. Wall and Jennings, like, they had a point in the lineup, you had Wall, Jennings with Oubre. That's essentially, no disrespect to anybody involved, it's essentially 3 non-shooters in the game. That's bad for floor spacing. It's not going to help John Wall's world. Why is Atlanta going to guard Oubre and Jennings off ball? They're not going to. So it makes it even harder, I think, for Wall to do what he wants to do. I mentioned a name the other day. I will not mention again. You will come across this table yell at me.
Don't do it.
But let me mention a different name.
Okay.
If you're going to give the whole 4 minutes, we're just saying that last 4 minutes at the end of the first quarter, you just see what happens from there. If you're going to have John Wall there, what about Trey Burke? He can do one freaking thing, which is make a three-pointer. He shot a good percentage from three this year. At least, I'm just saying, do something else. This is a big hole with the Wizards. You mentioned earlier that Markieff Morris might be the most valuable guy on the team after Wall Beal. Part of that is because they don't have an obvious, stretchy, big, athletic four. They had to go to Jason Smith. He can't handle Paul Millsap very well. Well, here's the other problem. They have 0 2 guards on this team. They have 1 2 guard. They have Bradley Beal. That's it. They don't have a backup two. Like, if Bradley Beal, God forbid, he did get in foul trouble. What is he doing? The best thing that sort of they can do is sort of put Bogdanovich in there as the two, but he's not a ball handler, and defensively he's obviously going to have some issues on some guys. So all I'm saying is that instead of this, and by the way, this 4 minutes is not really the whole game. They have to make shots. I mean, to focus on the big picture, they have to make shots. I mean, Otto Porter's got to make some, got to get going more. I thought he was more energetic early, but I'm just trying to think, like, when I mentioned the Burke thing, it's just because that's when the offense seemed to start to turn down. And the ball movement starts to die. You've got to keep. You've got to have a better balance on the court. The Wall Jennings thing is bad. It's sort of emblematic to me of sort of the problem. They're just not finding the right combinations right now to get anything going.
Yeah, I mean, I'm trying to look at some of the stats in terms of the lineups Brooks has played over the series, and it seems like he's played Morris a pretty decent bit at the five. Which, you know, we knew was going to be a thing going into it. Like, you know, maybe the Wizards will turn to some smaller lineups. I don't know the rate of success, but I don't know. I feel like we're grasping at straws. Like, what's the first substitution in the first quarter, the first couple substitutions where the Wizards are not putting themselves at such a disadvantage? And I don't know. I'm glad I'm not – well, actually, I wish I got paid – Scott Brooks money, and I would be glad to come up with some sort of decision. But
I will say this, I made this point to you guys where we were. I does feel like this is the first time all year we're having Sheldon McClellan, Daniel Oshefu, and now, instead of Daniel House, Chris McCullough is problematic in that they can't really go to those guys. Like, maybe you could throw Sheldon McCullough out there for a few minutes of defense. I mean, Olszewski essentially didn't play all year. McCullough, I mean, has he played 1 minute this year for the Wizards? So you can't go to him. But, like, hypothetically, and I'm not saying they did the wrong thing keeping him, I'm saying, but, like, in a different world, one of those guys is your sort of veteran-y player who, again, I won't mention a certain name, but somebody like some veteran-y guy who could hypothetically come in and try to do something. Because what they're getting right now from some of their other guys has not just been enough. Let me make one more disclaimer. The series is 2-2. If you've listened to this whole podcast, you're probably thinking the Wizards have gotten swept out already. It is 2-2. They have the home court advantage. They are coming home. I'm just saying these last few games were so distressing on some level that it is making me be like, boy, what the hell is going on here? Typically, teams play better at home, obviously. Role players typically play better at home. So that bodes well for the Wizards. But like you said earlier, it's not like they were killing in game 1 and 2. They are somewhat fortunate that Atlanta didn't figure out a way to steal one now that we've seen what happened on this end.
Yeah, I mean, you're right. Like, some people look at this, I'm sure maybe the bookmakers in Vegas, like, oh, it's a 4-5 seed. And just like out in the West Coast, the Clippers and Jazz are tied 2-2. And people's like, oh, 4-5 seed, that happens. But to me, and this is the point you made earlier, like, the Hawks lost like 9 in a row toward the end of the season. They just did not look good. I think the Wizards have them really in terms of talent, whereas you look at the Clippers and Jazz, like, that's a much closer 4-5 seed matchup. And I think we're just wondering in terms of, it's just a very hard Wizards team to figure out. They went on that run, you know, end of December into January, some part of February, and they looked really good, but, you know, were they always taking care of business? Did they always face or beat the top competition? I would say no. It was sort of like a streak that was built on not as solid of a foundation. And so now this is still the Wizards team we've been observing all this year, part of last year. They just haven't found that rhythm. And Atlanta is supposed to be some very tough matchups for them, and which is crazy because it's almost like, again, trading for Markieff Morris last year, it was almost like very much so to account for the Paul Millsaps and LeBrons of the world. And granted, LeBron and Paul Millsap, there's a big disparity between those two, but they still haven't set themselves up. You shouldn't have to be grasping at, like, maybe Olszewski or Sheldon McClellan or whoever would be in that 12, 13, 14 spot would help. They should have a better setup 1 through 8 or 9, much less the retooling they did to get Bogdanovich than they do have, and they just, their personnel is not meshing.
I just had a really good point, and it just completely went out of my head. What were you saying before that point about Millsap and Morris?
Millsap, Morris, Hawks, not that great in the season.
Oh, I got it. When the Wizards were arguably the best team, they were the best team in the East, and other than Golden State, the best team in the NBA, basically. It more or less, the calendar was December 1st to the All-Star break, okay? That is 2+ months. So, December, January, and 2 weeks of February. Mm-hmm. They come back in the All-Star break, it's like February 24th. What's today's date? Like April 24th?
Right.
It's been 2 months of this. Look, we at the time when the Wizards were hot, people kept telling me, I'm like, hey, it's 2 months. This isn't a week. Yeah. You have to at some point respect what they're doing. You know what? It's been 2 months. Since March 13th, they are 10-11. I mean, this has been going on for 2 months now that we haven't figured this out. I mean, that they haven't figured this out. But Otto Porter and Markieff Morris have not been as good after the All-Star break as they were before. Gortat, he still is giving you all the energy and the effort, but, you know, offensively, it's been a different type of deal. It's 2 months. So, like, I mean, maybe at some point, maybe we're just sitting here kidding ourselves on some level. Maybe it's not going, maybe the switch isn't going to flip because it's been a minute.
Yeah, you're right.
All right, on that positive note.
On that note.
Like I said, it is 2-2. I picked them to win the series. I'm not going to waver off of that. They are back home.
I picked them in 5, so I'm done.
I did as well. So, I'm done as that. But either way, I mean, they do come back home. I'm going to assume it's a 6 o'clock start. I'm assuming Portland's not going to come back and beat Golden State. But in any event, so that's it. So that's that. Kyle, it's good to see you. Glad to,
glad
we got to do this. Of course, go follow him on Twitter @truth_about_it_ no. truth_about_it. And of course, go to the website. Always
at Locked On Wizards, at Ben Standing.
Oh yeah.
No underscores or special characters there.
No, just characters. All right, we'll be back tomorrow with another podcast. Until next time, see ya.
Everybody just stuff me. Deal gets open for three. Dagger!
Home drive, off balance shot. Dagger!
Rush into Old Navy today for this can't-miss one-day deal. 50% off all Old Navy active for the family. Get the workout wear you need at a huge 50% off one day only today. Hurry in or miss out at Old Navy and OldNavy.com. Valid 10/20, select styles only, excludes in-store clearance.